This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney.
It's a beautiful day in this neighborhood, a beautiful day for a neighbor. Would you be mine? Would you be mine? It's a neighborly day in this beauty wood, a neighborly day for a beauty. Would you be mine? Could you be mine? I have always wanted to have a neighbor just like you. I've always wanted to live in a neighborhood with you. So let's make the most of this beautiful day. Since we're together, we might as well say, would you be mine? Could you be mine? Won't you be my neighbor? Won't you please? Won't you please? Please won't you be my neighbor? Hi.
I can't help but smile when I hear that. Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood hit the airwaves 50 years ago, February 19th, 1968, to be exact. Fred Rogers passed away in 2003, but he continues to influence children's TV even today. Joining us to discuss the legacy of Fred Rogers and Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, our Director of Development and Communications at the Fred Rogers Center at St. Vincent College, Karen Strubble-Myers. Karen, good afternoon. Thank you for being with us today.
Oh, good afternoon. Thank you so much for having me. I'm thrilled to be here.
Think TV Chief Programming Officer Jim Weiner. Hi, Jim.
Good to see you.
WVXU radio and TV writer John Kieswetter. Hi, John.
Hi, how you doing?
And David Newell, who's better known as Mr. McFeely, the speedy delivery man on Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. And let us know what your memories and favorite stories are about Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. We won't be able to take any phone calls for the first 10 minutes of this segment, but you can still email us, talk@wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And David, thank you so much for joining us. I want to start by asking you the story of how you landed the role as Mr. McFeely.
Hello, everybody. Speedy Delivery. I know them all there, so it's like having a reunion right here on the phone. I started in 1967, the fall of 67, thinking I had a job for 1 year. What happened is a mutual friend sent a telegram to me. I was in London visiting my cousin in 1967, and to make a long story short, he said Fred Rogers has gotten funding from the Sears Roebuck company to make a national version of Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, and I've made an appointment for you to meet Fred. And I said, "Boy, that's great." And I came back to Pittsburgh. I hadn't met Fred. I knew about the program, but I didn't know much more than that. And I came back and we met for about an hour, and I was the last one to be interviewed, and at the end of the interview, he hired me. And he said, "Oh, and by the way," he said, "my job was to be in production and collect props for the tapings, et cetera. But," he said, "I want you to do this part of the delivery man. You'll come in every so often and make a delivery. And so I won't have to bring it in. Well, we're opening the show up a little bit. We're adding cast, and we'll do location shots, et cetera." So basically, I started that day. This is February 19, 1967, we came on the air, but I started in September of 67, and we did about 30 shows, had them in the can, so to speak, and we were ready to go on the 19th. That's a brief, a very speedy description of how I got involved.
You did that very well. What's your favorite memory from the show?
Oh, every day, I think. I love working. You know, I look forward to going to work. It was not something that it was an ordeal. There was something new every day. And you felt you were working, at least I did, on something that had a mission. Fred had a passion and a mission for communicating to children, and he used this new medium. You know, this was back in the mid-60s, and basically it was some new medium. Communicate with children. But my favorite, I think, is, and it was partly my idea, a lot of people would tell us or tell me specifically about different things that bothered them when they were growing up, and one was the movie The Wizard of Oz. You know, they showed it every year, and it was a tradition, and people were frightened by it. The kids said, "Oh, that Wicked Witch and those flying monkeys really got me. I still, to this day, I'm afraid of it." And I mentioned it. You know,
I understand. Yeah.
You do understand. Well,
I felt the same way.
Well, you felt the same way. Well, see, there you go. I'm glad I had that incident because overall, it was symbolic of helping children understand scary things. That was sort of the underlying theme. But we used Margaret Hamilton to explain it. So Fred said, well, if you can find her, I'll write a script. And I found her. She was doing, you may all remember, she was doing commercials at the time for Maxwell House Coffee. She was Cora the Coffee Lady. And she had a tremendous career behind her already. And the ironic thing, it was that this commercial gave her financial freedom after all those years working in the movies. But that role made her immortal. So anyway, we had Margaret come on, and she came on as in her civilian clothes. We had a costume, and she showed us the cackle, and it really worked. It helped. We had a lot of letters afterwards saying, boy, that sequence really helped our family, not only because of scary things, but witches, but other scary things that helped help children get through it. So that was really, that's a sample of how Fred used television to communicate to children and help them get through the preschool years, which are very important but very difficult for a lot of kids.
What was it like to work with Fred Rogers? What was he like as a person?
He was a wonderful man. You know, the one thing that a lot of people don't realize by watching him on TV is the sense of humor he had. He had a great sense of humor, and he was a wonderful person to be in an audience. He was what I call a great appreciator. He appreciated other people's talents. And, you know, in fact, he was the one, Michael Keaton, as you know, was a floor crew member on our program for about 4 years. This is when he was in his early 20s, I guess. And one day, the crew did a little skit that they wanted to do for Fred. I had gone upstairs. We were in the same building where the studio was. And about 10 minutes later, Fred came up to the office just laughing. And he said, oh, boy, the crew just did a skit for me. You know, that one boy in the crew is going to be a star. Fred had an instinct about Michael. And sure enough, Michael proved him right. So that's what I remember about Fred. He was really, John and Jim can both tell you, they both worked with Fred at one point, and they have their own stories, but he was a wonderful, wonderful man.
Jim, you
were very disciplined.
I worked at WQED from 1986 to 97, and it was a huge place, over 200 employees. And so you'd run into Mr. Rogers every once in a while, like in the elevator. Did we ever meet? I think so. You came down to our studio and taped all of your
WQEX. In Jim's studio.
Yeah.
Television in a box.
The television in a box. Every once in a while, Mr. McFeely would come down and he'd have about seven tapes and he'd say, I need to do these promos for station visits. So we'd put a tape in and he'd say, speedy delivery. I'll be at the Rochester Civic Auditorium on February 17th. Take that tape out, put another tape in.
I was going to mention that. Thank you, Jim. Jim would roll his eyes every time I came down here.
I did not. But Fred, you know, you'd see Fred in the elevator, you know, like about once a week or so, and say, hey, hey, Fred, how are things? You know, what's happening? And he'd say, not much.
So you all had it. And Karen, did you ever meet him?
I did not. Unfortunately, he passed away the year I moved to Pittsburgh, which was strange twist of fate. I got out here and never actually had the opportunity.
But you're working with his legacy now, so we all, in
absolutely,
a way, have our own Fred Rogers stories. And he was a wonderful man to work for. But you know, he practiced what he preached. In a way, you could tell when Fred was angry or upset, he wouldn't throw a sneaker across the studio. But he would go over to the piano. We had a live band, so to speak, and he would sit down at the piano and start to play, and just sort of see. You knew when Fred was sitting at the piano during breaks that he was thinking something through or working something through, and he always said that his emotions came out through his fingers. The music and the program were so synonymous. That was, I think, the soul program, the music. And a lot of his messages came through that music.
David, you brought up something really interesting. You're talking about how he was kind, he never got angry. We've got an audio clip of Mr. Rogers addressing the U.S. Senate in May of 1969. And he was arguing, if he ever really did argue, but he's making the case that $20 million in funding for PBS should not be cut. And I just want people to hear how he handled this.
Okay.
Could I tell you the words of one of the songs, which I feel is very important?
Yes.
This has to do with that good feeling of control, which I feel that the children need to know is there. And it starts out, what do you do with the mad that you feel? And that first line came straight from a child. What do you do with the mad that you feel when you feel so mad you could bite? When the whole wide world seems oh so wrong and nothing you do seems very right. What do you do? Do you punch a bag? Do you pound some clay or some dough? Do you round up friends for a game of tag or see how fast you go? It's great to be able to stop when you've planned a thing that's wrong and be able to do something else instead and think this song. I can stop when I want to, can stop when I wish, can stop, stop, stop anytime. And what a good feeling to feel like this and know that the feeling is really mine. Know that there's something deep inside that helps us become what we can. For a girl can be someday a lady, and a boy can be someday a man.
I think it's wonderful. I think it's wonderful. Looks like you just earned the $20 million.
So in typical Mr. Rogers fashion, he's able to soften up this gruff, impatient senator.
Senator Pastore, that was the name from Rhode Island.
John Pastore, yes.
And that was the Nixon era, and public television is still defending itself. but at any rate, all that money that was, now we can see the money that was given to help public television, we can see the good it has done. I mean, with the neighborhood and the Sesame Street and all the other wonderful programs, it really is worth, in my opinion, the money that all of us contribute to it and through our taxes. I'll get off my soapbox now.
Well, I'd like to ask Karen about the Fred Rogers Center and have her tell us about that.
Well, the Fred Rogers Center was planned under the guidance of Fred Rogers as a way to carry forward his legacy and advocacy after Mr. Rogers' neighborhood. And interestingly enough, our chancellor, who is also Archabbot of the religious community here at St. Vincent College, was trained as a child psychologist. He holds a PhD in child psychology, and he had worked with Fred, and they struck up a friendship over the years. And when Fred was thinking about what he could do to continue his mission to children, our Archabbot said, Fred, why don't you come back to your original neighborhood here in Latrobe at St. Vincent College? And so that's how the concept began. And so we were planned under Fred's guidance. And unfortunately, he passed away in February of 2003, and we didn't open until September of that year. So we had sort of a little bit of what I'm going to call founder's drift. We had this wonderful concept, but without Fred to really say, this is what I want to do, we had to work very hard to get legs under our program. So as we started to think about our work, we really wanted to be a catalyst for creative change in children's media and use media for good. And so fast forward, you know, we celebrate the 10-year anniversary of the Fred Rogers Center a few years back. In 2014, we had our first Fred Rogers Legacy Award at St. Vincent College, and we reimagined our mission. And so our mission is to help young children to become confident, competent, and caring human beings. And this was actually based on a question that Joanne Rogers asked of Fred. Fred, what can you do to help young children become confident, competent, and caring? And we thought, if that's a good enough question for Joanne Rogers, that's a good enough question for us to be exploring. And so that's what we do. And we do that through a variety of ways. But ultimately, we work to support children's caregivers, whether that's an educator, a child care provider, a parent. We want to provide a positive, encouraging message to them, much like Fred Rogers did, to say that you've got this, you can live in a world where technology is coming at you 24/7, and you can live well with technology, and you can live well in a way that supports your child's social and emotional development. And the other thing that we talk a lot about here, we have a program called Simple Interactions, and it's really about looking at the relationships between children and their caregivers, and it's a video-based approach. It actually started in orphanages in China by one of my colleagues, Dr. Junlei Li, and he would go in and look at childcare in Chinese orphanages and look at what was going well and provide professional development around those video snippets where they were seeing a great interaction with a child and their caregiver. And what we've discovered is if you hold something up as an example and you say you're doing great work here, it tends to create more great work. It builds quality in early child care programs. And that's really critical with so many children in different types of child care programs, everything from preschool programs to after school programs to institutional programs like group homes. We've worked in all of these different settings to say, here's what's going right, and let's talk about how we can do more of this. And we find that when you uplift children's caregivers, you're empowering them to do amazing things with kids.
John, I wanted to get some of your memories of Fred Rogers, since you've worked with him in the past, too.
Well, I met him several times, but it was actually David Newell. We had Fred Rogers had come to Los Angeles to the TV Critics Meeting, and he was honored with a Lifetime Achievement Award. And David Newell came up to me and said, hey, you're in Cincinnati, we're in Pittsburgh, you ought to just come over for a day. And told my editors, they jumped on it. And so Michael Keating, the photographer, and I spent 2 days with him. And I was telling Jim before we came on the air that he's the closest thing to a saint, a living saint that I think I've ever met. And you agree.
Yeah, I always told people that, you know, if back in the day that, you know, if Jesus Christ had come back, you know, and was making the world tour, and he'd see, you know, everybody talking about how, oh, we did this in your name, and he'd say, oh, that's very nice, or other times he'd do the face palm, you know, like, oh, they're not getting it. But he would look at Fred Rogers and say, now this is the guy who gets it. He gets what I'm talking about, being Christ-like. He really was, and he was an ordained Presbyterian minister, but he really lived, I mean, as Christ-like an existence as there ever was, that I think most anybody who met him probably, you know, thinks the same thing.
Jim, I've heard the term radical kindness used to talk about what Fred Rogers was practicing during his years as a TV host. Is that what you're talking about here?
I think so. And towards the end of his last 10 years, yeah, and he was going around accepting Lifetime Achievement Awards everywhere, and he would just make people cry, have a good cry. He would go to the Daytime Emmys, and he accepted his Lifetime Achievement Award, and he'd have a speech, and they would get cutaways of all the soap opera stars, and the mascara is coming down the cheeks. He just had a way, even though people would always talk loud and people had short attention spans, when he talked, everybody, you could hear the pin drop. And he just had a way of tugging at everybody's heartstrings in such a way. I mean, you really, you were just amazed at how much he could touch you and everybody else. And half the room would be crying at the end of one of his speeches.
I've met hundreds and hundreds of TV stars, movie stars. He had absolutely no ego. He was unique in that way. I'd ask him, how do you write? Do you write your scripts longhand or on a typewriter or on a computer? And he'd say, well, I do them longhand. But John, how do you write? And he flipped the question. I mean, he was the hardest interview I ever did, but also my favorite.
We got a comment from Allison who says she outgrew Mr. Rogers as a teen, thinking he was uncool. But 30 years later, as a parent, now she really appreciates him, and she's watching him with her son.
There were three stages that I say that people have with Mr. Rogers up until they're about five or six. They think he's the most wonderful fellow in the world. When they reach about eight, they kind of disown him. He's not cool. He's kind of a wuss, all that kind of stuff. And then by the time they hit high school or college, they have this epiphany that he was right all along. And Fred Rogers was a very, very popular college commencement speaker. And he was treated like a rock star. He'd show up at a college and he would get the big standing ovation. And he would, again, make speeches that really just resonated for all these students.
I didn't get him until I had my first son. And I'd always want to watch Sesame Street. I love Cookie Monster. I love Kermit the Frog.
I loved never all knew that about you. You were a Cookie Monster fan. Okay.
And then my son would want to eat lunch, and he gets in the high chair, and the first thing he'd say is, Rogers. Rogers. He wanted to and it occurred to me that, the fast pace of Sesame Street and all the in-jokes and, jump cuts. And then you've got Fred Rogers, who's speaking directly to each little kid through the television, talking about things that concerned them. And nobody else on TV did that. Still to this day, nobody on TV does that.
Larry emailed and he says he learned service to others. He took a summer job at the post office because, David, Mr. McFeely was his role model. And he still feels that way 20 years later. Did you ever think you were going to be somebody's role model?
I never did. I did every day loving it and never really thought of any of that. I just thought of being part of this wonderful program and helping Fred with his mission. And everybody who gave their impression of Fred were so right. They were just, I would agree with everybody. And I was at most of those commencements with him, and I have seen him take a stadium full of people chattering and happy. They're getting out of college, et cetera. And when he spoke, you could hear in a stadium of 10,000 people outside with planes flying over. He really was in control, because I think people knew what he was saying. He meant it. It was coming from him and not somebody who wrote a speech for him and he just read it. It was phenomenal. He was, and at the same time, after he'd get off the, we'd go back to on the plane. He would be chuckling about something or saying how much he enjoyed meeting some family that came up to him. He'd remember. He would take notes, too. And it was just, I felt I have gotten a master's degree working with him in child development. I don't, but I felt I do just by observing him at his work.
Hey, David, I got a quick question for you. There's this movie coming out with Tom Hanks, and it's about Fred's relationship with a writer who was cynical before he had met this guy, Tom Junod or Janod. Were you aware of the relationship of that writer?
Oh, yes. I got the first call. Later on during the years, as you, Jim and John know, I was helping with the public relations. And so I would get the calls coming in, requesting interviews, et cetera. And Tom Junod called and said that he's been assigned by Esquire to do a cover story on Fred Rogers. I think they were, because, even people who read Esquire grew up with the program at one point.
And David, yes. I've got one last clip. We're running out of time. I got one last clip I want to get in here. So here it is.
Okay.
It's such a good feeling to know you're alive. It's such a happy feeling. You're growing inside. And when you wake up ready to say, I think I'll make a snappy new day. It's such a good feeling, a very good feeling. The feeling, that I'll be back when the week is new, and I'll have more ideas for you, and you'll have things you'll want to talk about. I will too. Be back next time. Bye.
Jim, you wanted to bring something up as we close this out?
The week of February 26th through March 2nd, PBS is going to be running a Daniel Tiger's Neighborhood followed by a Mr. Rogers Neighborhood, and they'll be on the same subject. So, for instance, on the Monday, Daniel's fish dies, followed by the Mr. Rogers death of a goldfish. So that's all that week on PBS.
Well, I'd like to say thanks to all of you for joining me today. Director of Development and Communications at the Fred Rogers Center at St. Vincent College, Karen Strubel-Myers, Think TV Chief Programming Officer Jim Wiener, WVXU Radio and TV writer John Kieswetter, and David Newell, better known as Mr. McFeely, the speedy delivery man on Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood.
And I want to say thanks to everybody for supporting the program all these years. Jim and John and Karen, thank you so much for all your support over all these years.
Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney.